Good morning and welcome along to another episode of Beyond Bitcoin. My name is Derek Graham and I'm here, of course, with my co-host, friend, colleague and recently traveller, Nitin Gower. Hey, Nitin.
Hey, Derek. I don't know about recently. I've been traveling for quite some time and from Dubai, I believe you went to Singapore and then back to Australia. I'm still hanging around in Asia for another week before I head back to Austin, but glad to be here again and looking forward to this conversation.
Terrific. So today, everybody, we're going to have a brief on what we experienced up in the Dubai 2049 cyclonic cryptocurrency event. And then we've got a special guest with us today talking about some fascinating new ID technology. So 2049, of course, was in Dubai and it was last week. And Nitin and I were there together, roaming the halls, talking to different people, attending side events. But it was chaos. We flew in on the Monday night. The flooding was extraordinary. We had taxi rides of 1.5 to 2 hours to get to locations. Certain hotels were literally turned into islands that you couldn't get into or out of, true Hotel Californias. And it was just nuts. There were 400 side events. I would say maybe half of them were just cancelled outright. Many of them were moved across the top of the Token 2049 event itself, and so with much smaller attendances. People couldn't even get into Dubai on certain days. They flew into Abu Dhabi, and quite a few people made a decision when they flew in to get the next flight out. So amongst this kind of cyclonic weather conditions and just floods, where as a car fanatic, I saw a whole variety of Rolls Royces up to their door sills and past trying to get through floodwaters. There were entire underground car parks, unfortunately, filled with Ferraris and all sorts of wonderful cars now dead that were just filled with water. So the impact was quite extraordinary in there. However, there was a very positive buzz at Token 2049. What did you think, Nitin?
No, I think there were all kinds of memes circulating on the internet that crypto comes to Dubai and Dubai can't handle its liquidity. Yes. Of course, they were talking about the water and the flooding that is happening. And before we introduce Eli, I'll tell you this, that while the flooding dampened a lot of side events and a lot of other adjunct events that happened to Token 2049, I think the event itself was great. Good speakers. I had really productive time speaking to a lot of sort of, you know, fellow co-founders, a lot of startup companies were trying to change, as always, you know, in spirit of, you know, what crypto is. They were enthusiastic. They were, you know, bullish on where the industry is heading. So that was very positive. Those 2 days were very productive, I would say, Derek. But I think, as you rightly pointed out, we spent lion's share of our time, which was meant to be in these various events and making conversations and new connections. We spent that time in waiting for taxis and commuting. Not the optimal use of our time, but I think it's an experience to be had. So no, it is good. I think part of Dubai was productive.
So always with these things, you get a sense of where the industry's heading and a sense of what is hot, what is moving. So I attended side events mostly, and those side events were VC and investor events. It's the world I'm in. And those VCs now are actively hunting Web 3.0 products. So that's a takeaway. The VCs are now pursuing Web 3.0 products. The entrepreneurs are seeking money for Web 3.0 and generally getting positive responses. So that section of the industry, I think, is alive from my experience there. And in addition to that, a lot of discussion on real-world assets. And these RWAs, there are a lot of token solutions getting touted in the exhibition halls. And there was just a general sense that RWAs were a very important part of this. You know, our view, of course, is that RWAs aren't technically challenging. They're more legality challenging, and they're more a change of rationale of how you're going to do business. But there, they were looking at how the technology is going to adopt RWAs. And also we saw in the halls, as we roamed the exhibition areas, trading platforms again. The sort of level I haven't seen trading platforms maybe since 2019. And those trading platforms had a bit of a twist to them because a lot of them were offering what they called AI. Really, it's not AI. It's machine learning. And so they were value adding to their trading platforms with machine learning. So my three takeaways were VCs active again, Web 3.0 is the focus, real world assets was a big point of discussion, and the traders are back, and this time with more AI. What did you see, Nitin?
So two things. Of course, AI, both from an investment perspective, has taken the front seat, and the crypto community is trying to take advantage of that and also sort of, you know, tag on the narrative of having AI, which I think technically makes sense only because of the fact that you have this veracity and velocity of data that blockchain emanates, and AI is the only way to make not just sense of it, but also, you know, have the application of either analysis, whether it's for business analysis or for financial crimes and so on and so forth. So I think that was there, but I also think that there was a sense of an upbeat nature from both investors and entrepreneurs. And yes, we'll bring in Eli in a few minutes, talk about his project. But I think there was a general sense of, one, global regulatory arbitrage. How do we solve that problem? How do we actually make sense of this? Because you can't do business in five different continents, you know, with five different sort of set of operations that govern these things, especially around crypto, which is truly a global sort of opportunity here and global protocol sense. Second thing I would say is that a lot of entrepreneurs are trying to tap into not the current narratives, but also figuring out the more, you know, pressing issues that they can address and raise funds to solve those problems. And that leads to, I believe, you know, something like Eli's working on. Derek, we should probably introduce Eli to our audiences. Eli, welcome to the show. Thanks again for taking the time. Tell us a bit more about your journey. I think you're working on something, some of the cool and really important aspect of digital asset industry with digital ID. And I think as me and you have discussed the time that I've known you, you've dedicated your time in the last at least 5+ years in solving this problem. As far as digital, you know, digital assets go, digital ID is such an integral part of the digital, you know, asset ecosystem. So tell us a little bit more about what you're working on. What's the journey? What got you to this point that you've decided to spend a lion's share of your sort of career in solving for this problem?
Yeah. Hi, Nitin. Hi, Derek. Thank you for having me. Sure. You know, I come from the world of finance. I spent more than 20 years in finance, and I'm an identity theft victim twice, the first time in 2015 and the second time just last year. So I'm really personal with digital identities and securing digital identities because, honestly, the struggle you go through when you fall victim and become an identity theft victim, like the struggle on a legal front, the struggle on the emotional front, on the financial front, all the obstacles, like no one wants to do business with you when you are an identity theft victim. You're become a risk to everyone. And so back then in 2014, I was trying to, you know, get out of finance and go into technology, which is a very passionate domain for me. I love technology and I've always thought I would be an entrepreneur there. We were building a social platform that is solving the problem of fake profiles, bots, and fake news, which was, you know, back then the trend, you know, like who do you trust? Do you trust what you see? And now it's becoming even worse, obviously, with AI. So when I fell victim in 2015, I realized that it was someone I met back then. He became a friend and he was, you know, collecting a lot of my information. So he literally contacted my bank and tried to access my checking account and take money from my account. Obviously, there was an open case. We did a long investigation, but to a long story short, we started looking into the problem. Like, what is the problem? How did this happen? At the beginning, I thought like, is it really so uncommon? And it turns out, no, a lot of people actually fall victim this way. And yes, they don't realize that their personal information is being abused day and night by a lot of fraudsters and scammers. And that's really how we started thinking about Catch.
And so have you created a solution to that? In that space is that, you know, is that there's a great deal of just logistics in being able to constantly provide ID all the time. And the opportunity to create virtually this sort of zero knowledge proof or equivalent and have one biometric idea is incredibly powerful. Is that what you've been centering around?
Yeah, absolutely. So the biggest problem in this space is that there's an abundance of personal information. And this personal information due to a lot of data breaches that are happening every other month, honestly. Like, just look around you, all the news. There's a data breach with multi-billion companies like Equifax in 2017, Microsoft last year, and so on. So these data breaches are providing scammers with an abundance of information they can use to their advantage. And this is really where the problem lies. 80% of fraud globally uses stolen ID credentials. And so if you're able to authenticate or authorize who can use your personal information, you're solving 80% of the problem. Just, I want you to imagine this impact you can create when you can authorize who can use your information. I know a lot of startups in Web3, they're actually pushing me forward on this. They're promising you and pitching that you can authorize who can use your information. You're in control. This is your information. No one has the right to just grab it and use it behind your back. And this is basically what Catch is promising here. We're promising our users and our businesses, when they use our service, is that they'll be able to authorize who used that information with a biometric identity that is connected to a human, not a machine, not a device. We were centering our solution on an approach that does not connect your identity to the device. Rather, it is connecting your identity to your biological hand. That's it. And so it's cross device, it's cross ecosystem. But what's the constant? Your hand. Your hand is the one that can unlock it, can use it on any platform, any smart device. So the big fear here, the big vision, is that we want to provide convenience. We want to remove the friction. We want to provide security and privacy at an affordable price. But how do you get the affordable price, which is a very important element? Today, the best biometric systems in the world, I would mention Face ID, Clear, Amazon One, are all based on a device. And when you think about it, that device is costing them tons of money, time to develop, maintain, deploy. Every time there's another device version or generation, same thing, rinse, repeat, deployment, maintenance. And this cost, they have to add it to their pricing models. And guess what? It's costing business a lot of money to adopt these technologies. What we thought about is that what if we can bring that security and convenience and privacy with an affordable price tag? And to do that, we have to eliminate the hardware element, which is extremely costly. And this way, when businesses want to use our service, all they need to do is a software solution. They don't have to deal with any hardware. And this is the beauty about it.
Help our audiences understand a few things, right? One is, there's the old way of ID, which is user ID and password. Then we had OTP, which is basically adding two factors. Now we have multi-factor authentication, which looks into biometric plus what you have and what you know, which is user ID, password, and everything else. And I see your use of your hand, which is what the recent Amazon in their stores have instituted as a mechanism to identify. Would that be considered another factor? One. Second question is that a lot of conversation in the industry has been around the amalgamation of Web 2.0 and Web 3.0 authentication, right? There's a whole element as we try to integrate these into our wallets. And the fact that the world is used to and slowly getting and have the threat vectors being addressed with multi-factor authentication, we are trying to sort of bridge the gap between that level of identity and eventually getting into the Web 3 identity models. So help our audiences understand, where does Catch fit in? Are you, should we view you as another, a plethora of multiple factor, having one more factors, or are you trying to be completely different and not in terms of cost, but also in terms of security and looking into purely a biometric way of authenticating the users?
Great question. We want to eliminate credentials, or what we label in our internal discussions here at Catch, static information. Today, static information or static devices are basically the authenticator. And the static device is authenticating you for that NFA that every time you generate. But guess what? And this is the biggest risk in cybersecurity. Once your device is compromised, hackers have access to your OTP. They have access to your Microsoft Authenticator, Google Authenticator. All these, I would call them like security stops, they can be bypassed once your device is compromised. And I want to talk more about how the problem gets bigger when you're managing a wallet and a digital asset, and you're trying to connect that wallet to a private key, that is connecting you, that is being triggered through a multi-factor authentication or a password. Now, there comes the biggest problem, but we can maybe talk about this in a moment. But what I wanted to mention here is that our approach is that your biometric becomes your password. We want to eliminate all the credentials mm-hmm. because guess what? There's credential management. It's a big pain point. It's costly for a large enterprise. Even on an individual level, I think everyone is, you know, juggling with hundreds of passwords. And I like you just mentioned earlier, some people have them on a notebook, right? Or they want to keep them secure away from the digital world. And so there's credential management on an individual level. There's a credential management on an enterprise level. It's costly. It's a pain. And, you know, all the employees have to change their password every now and then. They have to keep it secure. Those businesses have to deploy models onto their infrastructure to protect that credential. I mean, there are some numbers that were shocking, like $70 to change a password on an enterprise level. 40% of help desk calls are related to passwords. Like, just think about those numbers, the labor they have to employ. It's just a huge pain point. So, no, at Catch, we took a totally different turn. We want to eliminate credentials. Maybe not from day one. It's not overnight. It's a slow process, but eventually this is our goal.
Wow. So, and how do you bridge the gap between the Web 2 and Web 3 world? How do you bridge that gap in general? In the sense that, so the thing is, today, and this is something which in most of my Web3 conversations is that you have Google ID, user ID, and password. A lot of projects like Dynamic, for example, is trying to say, okay, you know, you have your passphrase. I'm going to attach a passphrase to your wallet ID that way you don't have to remember a key. The biggest issue with adoption of crypto industry, as you know, has been around key management. And these are complex structures, complex way to memorize these things to keep them safe. And, you know, there have been all kinds of weird way of people trying to keep these keys safe, which has been the biggest impediment, in my opinion, of adoption of crypto assets.
Yes.
How do you see Catch ID and what you're building on bridging that gap and making users more? If what you're suggesting is that I need to tie my credentials to your hand, for example, that's what you're going after, and describe the process per se, because I would imagine you need some sort of an apparatus to detect, just like you would need iris scan detection, or you would need some level of biometric detection. Oh, you know, for instance, fingerprinting and so on and so forth. How do you solve that problem?
So if you look at how the wallets today operate, there's a private key that governs them, and there's a trigger to that private key. It could be an MFA, it could be a password, it could be that memorized phrase you have or whatever, right? And the problem with this process today is that, A, you can forget that code, you can forget that phrase. Someone can steal it if it's not memorized. That private key also can be compromised. And this is another element where it's really dangerous. So who cares about, honestly, your phrase or your password? If they have your private key, they can just do whatever they want, basically. No, in our case, we're trying to trigger that private key. So we have two solutions in that respect. The first solution is, you know, MFA kind of like replacement, but instead of an MFA, the trigger would be your biometric authentication, which happens on your device or any other device. As long as it's a smart device, it has a camera module, you're fine. So we're providing you the security here where the trigger is the unlock with your hand scan on that smart device. So it's not connected anymore to something that can be compromised, if that makes sense. It's not an MFA where it can be compromised because someone has hacked your account or hacked your device and they have a backdoor to get that code, right? Or there's a SIM swap or whatever. It's not the password that you memorize and they happen to steal it. It's not your private key, which can be also stolen and can be abused really well there. No, it's your hand that triggers the use of that private key, which then unlocks that wallet and provides you access to whatever you want to do there. That's our approach. There's another approach that maybe it's hard to be achieved. It's not so attainable. We are thinking maybe to come up with a different blockchain technology, a different version that has a built-in biometric authentication built in it. So that wherever you take that blockchain, whether you take it to Coinbase or any other exchange, regardless of the country or the exchange itself, that blockchain will be secure no matter what. That's like the ultimacy. But no, we don't think this is attainable today. You can't really change. You want to improvise with the toolbox you have available at your hand right now. And so their approach is to just have that additional layer remove the static, remove the password, remove the MFA, and have your secure hand unlock that private key so that you can go ahead and do the safe transaction.
So Eli, as a listener in this audience, how's that going to happen? Will they have a phone that scans your hand? What will scan the hand if you're not involved with hardware? And when might a listener, user, use this? Would it be every time they have to access their software programs, computers, Google, whatever those normal things when 2FA comes into play? You know, would it be when they access their Binance, you know, and their wallet? Which level is it going to be engaged, and how does that hand get scanned?
And why hand? Why not iris scan or why not something else? Because generally there's a whole, you know, for example, fingerprints are unique and so is iris scan. How did you choose hand as the primary sort of mechanism here?
Yeah, the hand, the whole story behind the hand was that the hand was more rich feature and honestly than any other biometric. It does not require an infrared camera. Infrared cameras are notoriously known to be dysfunctional in a heated environment under the sunlight. So in an outdoor setting, they really fail well. We had one of the discussions with NEC in Japan, and they use infrared for border patrol, and they have a problem with that. It doesn't work under the sunlight. And the hand itself is a private biometric. So we want to get private and biometric at the same time, authentication that is secure. And so how do you make it private? Your face, you know, is less private, more invasive. If you think about it, culturally speaking, I mean, you came from Dubai just a few days ago, and you know very well there, people don't like to, you know, disclose their faces. So I have some of my clients there back in the day, and they tell me, no, we don't like facial recognition. It's too invasive. We prefer any kind of biometric fingerprint, whatever, but just not my face. Because again, yeah, facial recognition is invasive, while the hand is more acceptable, more receptive as a biometric. From all cultures, all ages, and the most races, I would say. And we had our own, actually, LA-based poll that shows 68% approval on that.
That makes sense. And so then how do you scan it?
Your camera module. We're only using a camera module on your device. That's it. So that means it can work on your iPad, it can work on your laptop, it can work on your device or any other smart device. So it can be also at the merchant's device. Let's say, I don't know, at a Panera Bread or something, I want to buy something there. I can scan at the merchant. It doesn't have to be my own device. So you see, this is the beauty of what we're trying to build. Passwords have been great because they provide you access anywhere. There's no particular device that cannot use passwords. And we wanted to do the same thing, where your hand can access your account on any device. Just like a password, but without the hassle and inconvenience of passwords, if that makes sense.
Where are you up to now with the tech? Can a member of our audience actually go to Katshid, which is KATSHID.com, and become engaged or get an application? Where are we up to with that?
Yeah, we encourage people to visit our site, learn about our technology, our product, and sign up for our early access. Now we're building it. We are conducting beta testing with 4 customers right now. So we're still in the beta testing phase, but we're looking forward end of this year to have a product out that we can deploy with real clients in a real-time environment.
Cool. So Eli, as we wrap, we could talk for hours on this because I think it's super interesting. Tell us, you know, as a wrap-up question on this, what is your future vision in context of Web3? How do you see this evolving, emerging in context of solving the multiple wallet issues? For example, today I have to have multiple wallets for multiple ecosystem, multiple chains. Could you see a way to amalgamate those from using your technology and solving the problem of not having to memorize 100 different private keys or keeping these private keys safe? How do you see that world evolving, and how do you see your relevance to what you're building in the Web3 and blockchain ecosystem?
Yes, this is the future. I really appreciate you brought me there. This is where you see the future, where we can create our own Katshid private key that is connected to the Katshid digital ID technology, where that private key allows you to govern multiple wallets all together. And this is kind of like our next vision. We want to build trust in a trustless digital world where if you're able to bring to the digital economy trust, like I get an email from someone I never, you know, like a newcomer, and I can trust because they have the, let's say, catch badge. Like I can trust what they're saying or any offer they're telling me, or they're trying to start a conversation for a business proposal. I can trust that. If you can, all the synergies, you know, in a digital economy will have a totally different landscape. And we believe this is going to be the future. Web3 obviously can be a great, we can leverage that to our advantage as well. But yeah, we see where we create our own catch private key that governs multiple wallets for you as a customer or a business. Mm. That's how the next vision we see in terms of that respect. Because we want to, you know, eliminate having, like, a lot of people having to deal with so many passwords, so many private keys, so many, I have this and that. And at the end of the day, you have like a hammer here and a hammer there. And then you're like, okay, I have too many. I'm lost. You know, I don't want to deal with this. Yeah. I want something more simple, easy. And technology can bring that. You know, technology is advancing so much. We can leverage AI. We can leverage a lot of things that are being developed right now to our advantage and create an ecosystem that is a standardized ecosystem, if that makes sense. And that's why, like, we're now beta testing, we're raising money, and we have actually our crowdfunding round now. We're launching it soon so that we can get that product in the hands of consumers as soon as possible. Because when we talk to businesses and consumers alike, they tell us, please, like, if we can live without passwords, please get this product out. Can we use it? How can we sign up? We get this strong interest from businesses, particularly because they have a really strong pain point with credentials.
Yeah. Look, 100% agree. When you look at this world, you want it to become the users to be what, you know, is often nicknamed normies. In other words, normal people, not degens that are fascinated by this space, love their multiple wallets, have got all their user phrases put aside carefully in, you know, metal blocks in third-party locations. No, this has to be something where you can keep your assets, bearer assets, in a wallet, where you can actually have, you know, biometric ID that says, this is who I am, now I do the transaction, there it goes. You know, my constant argument, I think you'd all agree, we don't want the users to be overly concerned about which blockchain they're using, what the bridges are, where the transactions, how the transactions are occurring. We simply want them to know they've got security, they're not going to be hacked, and they can transact their own assets without having a third-party group interfere with it. And Eli, what you're suggesting is very powerful. I look forward to seeing it come to commercialization. Again, for our audience, if they want to connect with you, how can they do that?
Please visit our website, catchid.com. That's KATSHID.com. And whoever wants to connect with me, you can add me to my LinkedIn. I respond to all messages there. That's .com/NEFarhood. They will find me, or Elijah Farhood. They can find me quickly there on LinkedIn, or you can maybe put it there on the screen.
That's terrific. Thank you so much for joining us and talking about a piece of technology, which I think as an audience and as a user, we realize how important it is. Look forward to seeing everybody next week for another episode of Beyond Bitcoin. Always reach out, make suggestions, share this with others. Bye for now, everyone.
Bye. Thanks, Eli. Great chatting. Thank you. Take care. Bye.
Oh, Eli, before you go, hang on.